And a very big thanks to the 2FM Drive team for getting this sunny evening underway. It is Monday, the 7th of July, and you're listening to Game On with me, Andrew O'Connor. Coming up between now and 7 o'clock, Alan Cawley and Austin O'Malley look back at another busy sporting weekend, which wasn't without its controversy. We'll review both All-Ireland Hurling semi-finals with Niall Moran, Brian Carroll and Eddie Brennan. As always, if you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552 or WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, very happy to say that I am joined here in studio by both Alan Cawley and Austin O'Malley. Happy Monday to you both.
Hello, Andrew.
Yeah, lovely, lovely sunny evening.
Beautifully. Yeah. Yeah, you're looking very summery in your Hawaii 5-0 shirt.
Yes,
it's
indeed.
Quite splashy colour now.
There's a bit of Wayne Mardle about you.
There's a lot going on in that shirt, but we won't get into it.
There's a lot to talk about.
Before we get into our chat, let us, I'll just go through the headlines of the day. Raymond Galligan has confirmed this evening that he has left his role as Cavan senior football team manager. He served for 2 years, having also played for a number of years, and has also had a stint as team captain, leading his side to an Ulster title in 2020. The Breffni men enjoyed notable wins over Monaghan and Mayo during his two championship campaigns, with his reign culminating in a 3-20 to 1-17 defeat to Kerry in the All-Ireland preliminary quarter-final earlier this summer. The FAI has requested a 4-week deferral to its latest appearance before an Oireachtas committee. The association has also been called to answer claims that they knew of allegations about a former national team manager's behaviour towards female footballers as far back as 2023. The allegations were made after an investigation by RT Investigates and the Sunday Independent. The FAI says it wants more time because of the complexity of the matter, which is being investigated by the Gardaí. Republic of Ireland international Aaron Connolly has just signed for Leighton Orient in the English Championship League One. 25-year-old now, he's almost had more clubs than Alan Cawley, and we'll have more on that later on. Croatia captain Luka Modric will join AC Milan after the Club World Cup. The move means the 39-year-old midfielder, who announced in May that he'd be leaving Real Madrid after the Club World Cup, will bring his 13-year spell at the Spanish Giants to a close. 8 Ireland players have been named in the British and Irish Lions starting lineup for Wednesday's match against the ACT Brumbies as Lions. Andy Farrell has named his strongest side yet. The game in Canberra is shaping up to be a dry run for the first test against Australia. Mara Itoje leads the side as part of a second row partnership with Joe McCarthy. Across the starting 15, there are picks considered first choice, including halfbacks Jemison Gibson-Park and Finn Russell. The All-Ireland combination of Bundia Key and Gary Ringrose have been chosen in the centres, with Blair Kinghorn making his first start at fullback. And the Leinster duo of Dan Sheehan and Tyke Furlong are at hooker and tight end, while there's another Leinster man at number 8. Jack Conan is given a nod to start there. Tommy Freeman and James Lowe are the favourites to fill the wings against Australia in Brisbane. Both are present for Wednesday. In other rugby news, Ulster's Jacob Stockdale has been ruled out of Saturday's test with Portugal with a shoulder injury. The 29-year-old was replaced in the first half of the opening summer test series against Georgia. A comfortable 34-5 win in Tbilisi on Saturday evening. In tennis, day 8 of Wimbledon in London, Novak Djokovic came back from 4-2 down in the fourth set to beat Australia's Alex de Minaur in four sets. 6-4, he took that fourth, and it turned out to be final set today. In the ladies' singles, Switzerland's Belinda Bencic progressed to the quarterfinals with a 7-6, 6-4 win over 18-seed Russian Ekaterina Alexandrova. In cycling, finally, Tim Merlier won the third stage of the Tour de France today after a sprint finish that resulted in a number of rider crashes and saw the Belgian edge just ahead of Jonathan Milan in the coastal city of Dunkirk on the finishing line. The stage took a dramatic turn 60k from the end when Belgian rider Jasper Philipsen withdrew from the Tour following a heavy crash just 2 days on for winning the opening stage in Lille. And the big three still leading general classification with just 6 seconds separating those top three. Matthew van der Poel leads from Tadej Pogacar with Jonas Vingegaard in third place. That is the roundup of all the headlines from a very busy day of sporting. And Alan is just watching the Euros and more goals, Alan.
Belgium have just scored, Andrew, which is a surprise.
That's an equaliser, is it?
Spain are the favourites, as we all know, and they've had total domination in the first half. Belgium did score from a set piece, which was kind of their best opportunity to score a goal, you would think. But they're after scoring a brilliant goal where they've just played through a lovely slide route pass from midfield in on the back four. And it's, I think it's Teelings goes through. But it's a great finish, but it went to a VAR check, so that's why there was a bit of drama. We were waiting, Andrew, and it took about 30 seconds, 40 seconds. But the referee has just awarded the goal, so 2-2 Belgium. Big surprise.
And how did the game start? Did Spain go? Did Belgium go one up? Or
No, it was 1-0 to Spain, 1-1, then 2-1 to score just before half-time. The King of Belgium, I think, is in the crowd as well, so they're all there today, Andrew, the Euros at the moment. But that's, as I said, it's Jurlings that scored the goal, the equaliser, 2-2. Now there's 51 minutes gone, but Spain, who were heavy favourites, not just for this match, but for the tournament as well, they're an outstanding team, defending champions, World Cup champions as well. So still plenty of time left and a long way to go for Belgium to try and stay in the game. But the fact that they've scored two goals will give them huge confidence because they lost their opening game as well, Belgium. So they do need something out of this.
No Ruby.
Just as I say that, Andrew, Spain have scored. Yeah, sorry. Esther Gonzalez has just scored a brilliant goal, 3-2 Spain. And she's lethal up front, to be fair. They're a brilliant team, Spain. They're great to watch.
That's the way to respond.
Just, Alan, we were talking, obviously, off-air about this, but they look technically so good, Spain. There seems to be a gap between, in terms of everything else around them.
Yeah.
Even on that last goal there, my God, the passing in and the touch.
They're outstanding, Austin, yeah. For anyone that's watched them, I suppose, the development of this team over the last 2 or 3 years, and now they're beginning to put trophies to all the brilliant play as well. But they're fantastic. So many of them play at club level with Barcelona, who were dominant, really one of the most dominant teams in Europe when it comes to women's football. But a brilliant pass here again. Alexi Patelis plays in, Esther Gonzalez, and she buries it into the corner. But they have a young girl playing, Vicky Lopez. She's only 18, the next kind of up and coming superstar. And they've just brought on the current superstar, who's the best player in the world in my view, Bonmati, who went down with an injury just before the tournament. So she's only coming back into the team. She's just come on at half time. She's a brilliant player. They'll take a lot of stopping, but I think Germany are strong and France are strong as well. But they've just gone 3-2 up against Belgium.
I know, well, we have a lot of sporting highlights to get through over the next sort of 15 minutes, but I know the Women's Euros was one of your weekend favourites. Apart from the Spanish game and the exciting Spanish players, it was two German wingers that caught your eye.
I've been busy the last few days with the Euros, Andrew, and I covered the Germany game the other night, and there was two wingers playing for them, and anyone who follows women's football will know these two, but they just caught my eye. They were absolutely outstanding. Julia Brand, who scored a brilliant goal, but on the other side, Clara Bull, who was unbelievable, plays for Bayern Munich, and just kind of physically, athletically, technically, they were absolutely outstanding, both those players. So even though Spain, I'm kind of bigging them up here, I do fancy Germany for the tournament because I think physically they'll be able to contain Spain. Spain would be better technically, but I think they'd have more power, Germany, that may be able to contain them. France as well are one of the favourites, were brilliant. Beat England
the other night, 2-0 was it?
2-0, and if 2-1, Ciara Walsh scored later.
Oh, yes.
But if you look out for the two girls that play on the left for them, Karshawi and Baltimore as well. Baltimore got the second goal, she was brilliant. So it's been a really good tournament, but I must give a mention as well, Andrew, to Finland, who are the lowest ranked team in the competition, but they've put in the best performances that I've seen. They outplayed Iceland, it was the opening day, and then they got beat 2-1 yesterday by Norway. They were really unlucky, but they've played some fantastic football. So Finland as well, and I also have a low light of the weekend if you want it.
Okay, well, let's leave the
lowlights. I haven't had a low light in a long time.
Let's leave the lowlights for a minute. Let's stay positive. Let's stay positive. Austin, what was your first highlight?
My first highlight actually was, I know there was a lot of Gaelic games on over the weekend, and obviously there was a lot to be taken from the hurling, and you guys will discuss that later. But I was down in Newbridge yesterday at the All-Ireland Minor Final, and I hadn't been down at one in quite a while. Obviously, it was held in Newbridge, which is... been, you
or
know,
nowhere. There's nowhere else to
there's
play.
There's nowhere else to go, yeah. Thanks for that memory. But Cedral St. Conlon's Park, since it's been redeveloped, it's a fantastic ground for something like this. But I just thought, I hadn't been at an All-Ireland Minor Final in a while, but just, you know, there was a moment there where they were walking around in the parade, and obviously it's under 17 now, you know, and it's such a build-up to it. And I know the tagline with the minor is that it's major, but it really is. When you see how young some of these guys are, some of them are, you know, 15 or just turned 16. But the level of composure that both teams showed, I thought, throughout, and the game that they brought to it, and just the sense of occasion, and like, I just, they were a credit. Both teams were a credit, I think, in terms of the facility and everything as well, but also the parents, you know, that were there. I was standing beside a good Tyrone man, and he absolutely was going through a vape like I've never seen anyone. He was more nervous than the players. This grape, he was like a dragon beside me. There was a grape vape going for about the 70 or the 60 odd minutes.
He was a one man cumulus.
He was
a one.
He was. I felt sorry for him. Yeah,
we discussed him on Friday. The young lad that's going to West Ham.
That's right.
Did he play?
No. And so
no,
actually,
which, wasn't allowed.
Which is really, I suppose there's always a subplot to this, that the guy that actually replaced him ended up kicking the winner.
Okay.
Young
wow.
Dermot Martin. So there's a little subplot in that. It was a ball, like, they had done so well to come back after the penalty of 52 minutes, but a ball back at the post, and your man was in the right place at the right time, slotted over. Now, Kerry would probably feel they were aggrieved. They could have had a free at the end to maybe to send it to extra time, but it was a brilliant, brilliant showpiece, just for, I think, for a minor All-Ireland and all that's contained in it. And I think huge kudos to the players, the fans, and just the ground staff. That was a brilliant occasion.
That young man will still get a winner's medal, though, won't he? He can take it over to West Ham.
He can hang it in the West Ham. Yeah.
So what I reckon, because I saw the story, and I think they signed him on Thursday. It was a Thursday then they announced the signing.
Yeah.
And then they almost immediately, it came out that he wasn't allowed.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, someone in West Ham has watched the Kevin Moran documentary.
Somebody, in the build-up, I was thinking, surely, like, there must be some way that he'd be able to talk. Like, it's a big, big moment where they give it. But obviously, once you sign a professional contract, then you'd know more.
You get it from West Ham's point of view.
Joe Kerr is the young man's name, by the way.
Kyle Coney was on with us Friday. Yeah. Kyle was talking about his experience where he went, I think, Aussie roots.
Aussies, yeah.
Yeah, but what he had said was he had negotiated the contract well in advance to say, if we go far in the competition, I'm allowed to still play until we're out, basically.
Yeah.
Whether that was discussed with this lad, I'm not so sure. We don't know.
He probably didn't have the same sort of leverage in the deal, I suppose, at the age of 16.
Yeah. And it's so, like he's an asset now to West Ham. They have to look after him. What if he was to get injured? And straight away, your mind does go back to the Kevin Moran stuff.
Yeah, now, anyone who hasn't seen the Kevin Moran documentary, he was playing with the Dubs, and he signed for Manchester United. And then he went to the club and said, oh, by the way, there's a little sort of Irish competition we have every year. And do you mind if I go back and play and finish out the final? We had the final. And obviously, whoever he was speaking to in Manchester United didn't realise the extent of the All-Ireland football
the
final.
90,000 people in back in that day, and the role that he was playing. And
unbelievable.
He didn't spare himself.
Playing out with a hamstring injury. Yeah,
that's
he?
Right. He tore
phenomenal.
A hammer after, I think, after his first or second run.
That documentary is brilliant.
Had at least two black eyes.
Yeah.
Had at least two black eyes.
And that was before the game started.
Anyway, I don't think anyone will make those mistakes
again. That's the thing, like, with the advent of social media and everything. Like, imagine the young fella did play.
Yeah. And he's quality. Like, I've been watching him throughout. Like, my God, like, he's so creative, and he's diminutive. Like, his movement, he's been brilliant, like, for them, you know. So hopefully he will get a medal, as you say, and he'll have that in his back pocket.
Alan, do you have a second highlight, or will I go with my first?
You go with yours, Andrew.
Okay, well, I was happy to see Alex Dunn. Obviously, we've been all keeping a good eye on him over the last couple of weeks since he was bounced up the top of the Formula 2 Championship. They were in Silverstone, I suppose, as close to his home Grand Prix as he'll ever get. And there was the sprint race on Saturday. Now, he qualified on Friday. He qualified in second place, but they reversed the top 10 for the sprint race, which I think is a stupid idea, because it doesn't give you any, you're still going to be second in the featured race, but he started ninth in the sprint race, if that makes any sense. Doesn't to me. And he didn't finish. He had problems in the race, and he didn't get to finish the race. But on the Sunday morning, he finished second. He started from second place and finished in second place. And he went from fourth in the championship back up into third. So he closed the gap on the championship leader to 18 points, I think he is behind. So he's well in touch, and great to see him consistently score
points. He's a real talent, isn't he, in terms of what he's...
But that's not my highlight. My highlight was, because I got up to watch that, and that was just a teaser.
You were just building up there. You had me there. That was a starter.
That was a teaser. Yeah, that was just
we were all in.
That was just the consummate.
The main course.
Anyway, after that, the Formula One started, and there was bedlam, there was rain, there wasn't rain, there was wet tyres, intermediate tyres, slick tyres. Anyway, Nico Hülkenberg, who's a German driver racing for Sauber, he's 37 years of age. He was racing in his 239th Grand Prix. That's some Elch stint. He had never been on the podium before, ever in his Formula One career. And he started in 19th place, and some good pit stops and some good sort of tyre strategy had him up, and he was up into fourth, and then he was up into third, and he held on. He beat Hamilton, was behind him, and I suppose the British crowd were...
So how many races? 239?
That was his 239th
That's a lot of sweat.
Formula One Grand Prix. That's a lot of kilos lost.
That's a lot of kilos.
He finished third, the age of 37. So that's my first highlight of the weekend.
Yeah. Fair play. Yeah. What resilience.
Fair play. Yeah.
That's unreal, yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible.
39.
And all the other drivers were delighted for him. Even Oscar Piastri, who finished second and was in a very, very bad humour because he did something silly and got a 10-second penalty and basically gave the race victory to his teammate, Lando Norris. Mm. Even despite how annoyed he was, he even said, "It's a great day for Nico. Yeah. That's the best thing that happened today."
It's incredible the attrition on the body from that sport. Like, if you ever read anything like around it, and for a guy at that level to still go, you know, not going and not making podiums.
Yeah. And to be in a car that's not the fastest car every year for 15 years, that's tough. That's tough.
Knowing that
that's
free
drive,
go out.
That's skill.
Yeah.
That's
fair
dedication.
Play to Nico.
Yeah.
It's well
like
done, Nico.
It's
Herders.
A devotion.
Right. Second highlight of the weekend, Alan.
I have a low light.
Okay,
I haven't had a low light in a long time.
Okay.
But I feel the need to let the
exercise.
Low light out of the bag.
Okay.
Because I was filled with so much optimism and excitement, and as I say, it was like I was like a kid in a sweet shop going into Croke Park on Saturday. And after the brilliant win they had against Limerick, I was thinking all the Dublin people will get behind the hurlers. As I walk into the ground, it's just a sea of red, very little blue. But I'm thinking, that's okay, these Dublin hurlers, they'll be able to cope with that. After 8 minutes, I felt like walking out the door, Andrew.
And after, a lot of blue.
And I did after 58 minutes. And I was actually annoyed. I really was. Because I just thought an All-Ireland semi-final. And I just couldn't believe the approach from Dublin and how open it was against the sharpest shooters in the country at hurling. Like, these fellas eat goals, the Cork hurlers. And all year they've been going goal hungry. It's a goal frenzy when they play. And the space that was afforded to them in an All-Ireland semi-final, I just couldn't believe it. And I've been critical of Ange Postecoglou all year. And it was like as if he set up the Dublin hurlers before the match, because they were just so open. I couldn't believe it. And the manager came out, to be fair to him.
It's the Ange litter.
Who we praised for beating Limerick. And I loved his interview after the beat Limerick, because he says we're in it to win it. Like, we're not just settling for this. And that's why I was so optimistic, thinking I was so like really impressed by him.
So he played a third forward. And he went man to man at the back. That was the decision he made. And he was very honest afterwards. He said,
"That's what I'm saying,
I got it wrong."
Well, he got it so wrong, but I just still...
I think he prefaced that with that had they gone zonal, then like, I suppose, in terms of the experience of watching, you know, them destroy teams when teams have gone zonal against them, in terms of that you're not actually, you know, gone man to man, you might get more double ups than that, but I think he thought that was the best course of action given
I just
there. So
because they're so early in their development, and he's only obviously new to the job, to go toe to toe with a team as good as Cork, I thought was a bit, you know, like, you might be getting
naive.
Massively. And you might be getting a little bit ahead of yourself.
Yeah.
And you think Cork are a few years down the line under Pat Ryan, and I just thought. And look, hindsight is a wonderful thing, and we all know that, and I'm sure he's thinking that today. But I still think, even off what he explained and what Austin has said, even if he went with that approach, and it's not negative to do that against Cork, I think that's been realistic because of what you're playing against. If he done that, I still think they may have been in the game 50-55 minutes, and then let loose if you want, and do the approach what he did maybe from the start. But they were out of it after 10 minutes and the game was over.
Yeah, it was 3 goals down. We have Brian Carroll, Eddie Brennan and Niall Moran on in a couple of minutes' time. We'll go through this all in a bit more detail. But a question related to you, I mean, Austin, as a manager, you have sort of faced those sort of quandaries before. You're facing a team and, you know, you're looking at them, you've done the analysis and you think, how the hell are we going to stop them? Or do we try and outscore them?
Yeah, look, it's always a big part of it in terms of your analysis of the opposition and that. And all you have to go on is, I suppose, looking at what their key strengths are and in terms of trying to come up with something to lock that down. So, like, there's two approaches there in terms of the man-to-man stuff and the zonal stuff. And you have to look, I suppose, always maybe at how those different systems have played out prior and then maybe what your own strengths are. And he clearly felt that, like, if we're going to stay in this, that we have a better chance where we're toe-to-toe and we can grapple and we can fight one in them one-to-one battles. And from a zonal perspective, you just leave, you know, space between lines where the likes of Cork could pick you off as well. So there are both of those approaches. But I suppose you like it's a quick turnaround from one game to the other. So you have
6 days. Six days. Cork at 4 weeks.
Cork at four weeks. Yeah. You take the approach and you have that done by probably 5 days out. This is where we're going. And then you drill that and you have to stick with that and you have to back it. And it's that's where the growth is for coaches to learn.
And that's one thing with the approach, that the way he set up, as you say, and whatever about like leaving the space in behind. But even out the field, like there was the number eight, Tim O'Mahony, and I must have commented to the man that was sitting next to me four or five times. He was running around the pitch on his own, literally on his own. Nobody near him. So whatever about like leaving the lads kind of isolated at the back in the 1v1 situations, even out the field, they weren't getting close enough, they weren't getting tight enough. Like you think they'd be so ravenous in terms of their, like you look at the game yesterday, Kilkenny and Tipperary, and they're going toe to toe, hell for leather, like proper stuff. Like it amazed me. I just thought like, and maybe the occasion got the better of them. I don't know. They're not used to that kind of thing. And as I said, they're very much in their infancy and their development. But I was disappointed with the whole thing because I was really optimistic for them. I was kind of there to support them.
I can see your disappointment.
I was.
I can see it. You're a Dubs hurling fan now. Just
well, I was.
Keep that disappointment handy. That's my my lifetime of experience. Before we let you go, Austin. Raymond Galligan stepped down today as Cavan football team manager. The managerial merry-go-round is started very early this year.
No, it has, yeah. And he's another one that has kind of bit the dust, I suppose. I was looking through it there earlier. Like, there's probably, I think it's eight maybe vacancies at the moment right across when you even look at sort of now Cavan, Roscommon, Antrim, Dublin, Louth, Mayo, Sligo, Waterford. And I'm sure there'll be probably one or two more. And I suppose it's just a signal from the perspective of maybe the increase in time commitment and energy and load that comes with an inter-county management post and that. And with everybody with the best intentions, sometimes it can just be largely undoable. So there's a lot going on there in terms of Gaelic games, and I'm sure there'll be, as you said, there'll be a lot of jockeying for positions, and it's a challenge for county boards to find people now with that time, with that energy and that sense of commitment.
But all those jobs, myself and Alan were thinking there's one that would really suit you, you know.
I think there's two.
Well,
I don't know, lads.
Whatever about it, the one in the park. You know, Joe Duffy's not going for the presidency. I think Austin will be a shoo-in.
I need to get a dog.
We'll be back after this break.
The park, yeah.
Lots more hurling coming up.
Game on.
Hurling.
Welcome back to Game On. It is Monday evening, 27 minutes past six. Delighted to say I am joined by Niall Moran, Brian Carroll and Eddie Brennan to discuss all of the hurling action at the weekend. We've touched on it with Austin and Alan, but let's get straight into the chat because the GA says it's awaiting the report of referee James Owens after the merge that Tipperary were 420 to 30 points, 2-point winners over Kilkenny in the All-Ireland Hurling semi-final, 1 point less than the scoreboard in the stadium suggested. A Noel McGrath effort at the end of normal time waved wide by the umpire, but given as a point in the scoreboard, apparently putting Tip 4 up 421 to 29 points at the time. Speaking after the game, both Kilkenny manager Derek Ling and Tip boss Liam Cal confirmed that they thought the difference had been 3 points at the final whistle, which would have made a huge, huge difference to the mindset of the players on the Kilkenny team. Eddie Brennan, let me start with you. I mean, it's an unfortunate thing that we have to start with this after two brilliant games of hurling, but what is the reaction to the story in Kilkenny?
I don't know, to be honest, because I wasn't around and talking to people, but taken in isolation, take out the people that are involved and the teams involved, the incident. You know, you're talking about all the eyes and ears that we have on something on a day like that, and then just something so simple can have such a bearing on things, because there was time there. And look, if you're any team involved in that scenario, that's a game changer, because you now have to hunt 2 points as opposed to that elusive goal. And it's mad how it's gas in the midst of all the madness. Nobody picked it up, the fourth official. Neither bench has even spotted it. I remember even myself, I was sitting in the Davin at the other end, and you know, I was like going, did they actually wave a flag there? And my own young lad said it to me. He said, they didn't wave a flag, but he said they're after putting it up on the scoreboard. So there was questions, and I was sitting in the middle of plenty of people, and they were the same. And if that's time up, grand. But look, it is what it is now. I wouldn't be... For me, where we sit right here, right now, I'd be just going, yeah, well, that's for somebody else to decide. But from a Kilkenny perspective, And it would be valid. I think there's probably a valid argument there, but I wouldn't be going, I just, look, what's done is done, unfortunately. That's my take on things. It's a cruel way to go out, but I suppose, look, if I had to come back to the brass tacks a bit, Kilkenny had chances, you know, to probably win that match and control that match. And look, that's, you know, we move on. For me, anyway, if I'm a Kilkenny person or I'm anyone involved in Kilkenny, I'd be just, you know, move on. It's you know, tip, when the match was there to be won, they went and won it. And that's the difference. And yeah, it's a very, very unfortunate incident. And again, everyone will have a different opinion. Some people would have a very, very strong opinion of that. But look, it is what it is. And some days you get them, some days you don't. Might seem a very matter-of-fact way of looking at it, but that'd be my view here and now.
Yeah, I mean, it was just unfortunate because, as we said, if Kilkenny were only 2 points down, a couple of those opportunities, you would have seen one of them tap one over the bar and then expect to get another chance to level it up. But because they were 3 points behind,
yeah.
I think it was John Donnelly who had that shot that was just blocked on the line, laid on. And I mean, he was far out. It was a speculative attempt, but it would have been an easy point for a man of his quality.
Absolutely, yeah. Look, and there was opportunities. Owen Cody had an opportunity where he broke in along by the Cusack stand in line, Davin, and there was an easy point there for him as well. So, yeah, it's a heartbreaking thing, you know, if you really go after it and kind of tear yourself about what would be. And like I said, Andrew, it is something that if you decided in the morning that you wanted to go after it, you know, I'm sure There's an argument and a debate to be had on that, but like I said there, look, it's I think the calendar year wouldn't allow anything further to be squeezed into the between now and an All Ireland final.
No, Brian Carroll, what's your reaction? I mean, I know we're going to talk about the quality of hurling in a minute, so don't despair, everyone. But let's just get your reaction to this unfortunate situation.
Yeah, look, it's not ideal, but still, when I was watching it on telly, I felt that Kilkenny should have been popping a couple of those balls over the bar, and Eddie's referenced probably the Owen Cody one. You know, the scoreboard was showing 4 points at that stage. They needed two scores. He could have just tapped one over, because sometimes when you chase goals from even 2 or 3 minutes out, those opportunities don't appear, but there can be easy points to take, because obviously teams in Tipperary's situation last night, they defend the D and defend the 21 and they make sure that it's almost impossible to get through. So those easy scoring opportunities can be out the field, and you know, maybe you can get desperate in the last 30 seconds maybe. So I just felt Kilkenny's game management coming down the home stretch probably let them down as well, for such experienced players. Yeah. But like, small margins too, one of the big things, and you know, Eddie probably spoke about today, Rhys Shelley pulling down that shot from Jordan Malai. Like, that was probably the game changer. That was pushing Kilkenny 3 points in front. And Tipperary just, you know, went down the field and got a point, and it was back into one. And, you know, it allowed Tipperary that little bit of belief that maybe it was going to be their day, you know. So they're all small margins. It's very unfortunate. Can I just say, though, like, this occurred, you know, because the puckouts are happening so fast. It's probably a bit of a bugbear for me. I know the game of hurling is helter-skelter and we're getting some of the greatest games we've ever seen. But like, in times gone past, there will be a little bit more pause between puckouts, and there might have been a realisation that the scoreboard was wrong, and an opportunity for, say, maybe Kilkenny or the fourth official to actually intervene and say, hey, hold on a second, there's actually something wrong here. But when obviously, with the way the rules are interpreted now, a wide ball means Owen Murphy could poke that ball out straight away, which he was going to do, obviously, try and get that ball back into play when they were chasing a deficit at that time. But I still think that therein lies a massive problem with how quick the puckouts are happening.
Niall Moran also joins us. Niall, are you in agreement with the lads?
Yeah, 100%, and I can only imagine how frustrating it is for Kilkenny people this morning. I suppose, look, the only saving grace for the umpire was at least he caught the ball. God knows if he dropped it. But look, I suppose, again, for Kilkenny people, I think it'll only add to frustration. Like, there was, so as Brian alluded to there, there were so many moments, and invariably Tip at all those moments where they made the blocks, they made the hooks, and even for Shane O'Donoghue's goal, like, for Kilkenny defenders, the quality of what they were, not to get a block or a hook on it, like, that's the thing that will haunt them the most. And look, Kilkenny people being Kilkenny people, they're going to move on from the circumstance on which under which they were beaten. And look, there's no guarantee as well. People speak about how Kilkenny might have chased it differently if there were 2 points down. Well, I would imagine as a Tipperary team, you would have defended it differently if you're only 2 points down as well. So look, there, it's not for conversation. Kilkenny had the opportunity with 69 minutes up. They were well in control of their own destiny, and I think for them, maybe a little bit of leadership in their forwards that at this stage of the day they might have expected from a couple of players. I just don't think they got it. At the end of the day, you're looking at the remaining teams in the championship, and like the Cork team, it's not Patrick Horgan's team, or the Tipperary team, it's not Noel McGrath's team, but still in all, when you look at Kilkenny, it's still TJ's team, because I know Massey Keown was brilliant, but coming down the home straight, they were still hoping that TJ would pull that moment to magic. And I suppose, look, that's the bigger headaches that Derek Ling is going to have over the year, like over the winter. Okay. That where are they going to get those couple of guys? They're going to give them an extra couple of percent, because, look, I was no different to most people. I lamped Paddy Power in the bookie. I lamped Kilkenny in the bookies on Saturday. I really felt they'd win the All-Ireland. I really felt all year long, especially with Limerick on, that it was setting themselves up for it. And ultimately, they let the opportunity slip. So, look, for Derek Ling, I suppose that raises questions about personnel going forward. If TJ decides to stay on, which he will, but who is going to be the guys that are going to lead them to the next All-Ireland? And look, that they're the questions. They're among some of the questions that will be asked by Kilkenny people over the next couple of weeks.
Okay, but before we heap some well-deserved praise onto Tipperary, Eddie, let's just talk about Kilkenny and what that season meant for them. They did make progress, possibly a disappointing way to finish. But overall, when, you know, we have a couple of weeks off and emotions are slightly sort of lower, it was a good season for Kilkenny?
Yeah, if you want to look at it that way. Andrew, I don't mean to be...
Well, I do. I'm always a positive person. No. But...
Yeah, no, I hear your point. And you can always, we always try to stack the positives and take the positives out of it. But the reality is you're ultimately judged no matter what jersey you're wearing. In the business end of the championship, you're judged on results, and unfortunately, Kilkenny had plenty of opportunities. There was large periods of that match yesterday. They hurled really, really well. You know, they had three mistakes or three issues to deal with in the first half. All three of them ended up in the back of the net. Massive sucker blows when they had made all the running. You know, they had really, really put a squeeze on the Tipperary puck outs. They were, you know, they were dominating, and, you know, just a moment. And, you know, I can't underestimate, you know, the hurling smarts that John McGrath has, or understated. You know, he stood out. You know, the Kilkenny lads are all diving in. They get a brilliant block on Jake Morris, and you look up, brilliant. And John McGrath, like any good forward, you know, he was hanging out loose maybe for a hand pass. The ball hangs out lovely for him, and he just holds up his strike for 1 second to let, I think it was Hugh Lawler, come across in front of him. And he just leaves the far corner open, and by God, does he finish with aplomb. And that type of finish, does not, you know, that's a real quality striker's goal. And, you know, Darren McCarthy then and Jason Ford's one. Kilkenny done so well to bounce back from that. You know, they hurled so well in periods, but they ultimately weren't able to deliver the knockout blow. And, you know, I think Brian touched on it earlier on. I felt there was a hint of Limerick in their pomp about Tipperary yesterday, insofar as a collective, that the Tipperary defence were really, really solid. They made sure there was no goal opportunities. If you're being critical, you could say, well, there was a few of them came in with some, you know, whip tackles. But if I'm involved with a team that defend like that, I'm proud of them. You know, they hurled so well as a unit. They made sure that there was no shots, there was no clear runs gotten through on goal. In terms of the goals, you know, they won that battle 4-0. And that's hard from a Kilkenny perspective. Like I said, come back to the original question, Andrew. You know, unfortunately, you're coming up short in a match that you were well in. And I'd have to agree with the lads too. Like, you know, you have a lot of experienced personnel on that field now, and they have to be able to manage that situation better. They have to be able to, you know, for me, I looked at even the shape of their forwards off the ball in the last 8-9 minutes, and they were still persistent with this gathering in the middle. when I think at that stage of a match, when you have a numerical advantage, you need to start stretching defenders out. You need to start opening up that pitch and making it very, very big. I think, you know, to be a saying there, when you're defending, you make the pitch as small as could be. But when you're attacking, you make that pitch as big as could be. And, you know, I just felt they could have been better. And that's easy to say for me. I wasn't down in the middle of all the pandemonium. And you're not being critical of players, but I think it's a fair observation. And ultimately, Kilkenny are left to rue that today. And I think it's different if you're dominated and you're beaten by 6 points or 7 points comfortable. I think that's a different situation. But I think they were well in that match and they just, like I said, didn't deliver the ultimate, the knockout blow, and had to really dig deep to get back to where they were and command that match. But like I said there, Brian touched on it. I felt that moment when Rhys Shelley decided he's going to bring down that ball. If there's somebody in close to goal, he can't do that. You know, he cannot afford, no goalie will do that if you have a forward sitting on the edge of the square, hugging the edge of the square, which I would be very in favour of. And as a result, then he quickly spotted that was on. It's a moment. It's a moment that wins the match.
A couple of moments won the match. And it was, Brian, it only seemed like after Darren McCarthy was sent off that, I don't know what happened to the Tipperary, maybe just psychologically they all realised they're going to have to do all a little bit extra individually to get the team performance up for the last couple of minutes. And then Oisín O'Donoghue's goal was just extraordinary.
Phenomenal. Look, this man is knocking on the door for a while now, even though he's only 19 years of age. Like, he's come up through the schools with Cashel, with his club as well. They're winning the Premier Intermediate last year, and look, he's a phenomenal talent, winning under 20 this year. And you know, he could arguably be starting, but he's obviously in that kind of super sub role at the moment, coming in after Noel McGrath too. So I think that's a big plus for Tipperary. You know, their bench, it's been well lauded this year, the impact it's having day in, day out, every time they go out. So it's phenomenal, and it's similar to with Cork. You know, this is no accident that the two best teams throughout this year with the best panels as well are in the All-Ireland final. And you know, I think Tipperary were worthy winners yesterday, to be sure. But you know, the impact of the young players that they have. You know, Robert Dial obviously stopping that ball on the line. It had beaten Rhys Shelley, but you know, fantastic. Just wherewithal to get back on the line, do your job. And he's been a revelation at cornerback as well. And then obviously Andrew Ormond, he's not young. He's 24, 25 years of age. He's been around the scene the last couple of years. But his work rate, you know, he wasn't clipping the 3, 4, 5 points he's been getting in the last couple of games. But his work rate, he won a couple of massive frees coming down the home stretch as well. And, you know, it just shows the faith that Liam Cahill had in him to leave him on the field, you know, especially when he actually hadn't scored from play. But, you know, and then obviously Darren McCarthy's been mentioned as well. You know, he scored a goal, he set up a goal, he set up another point and won a free. So, you know, he had a decent impact for such a young man as well, like at 19 years of age in your first All-Ireland semi-final. But for all those younger players of Tipperary, it still comes back to that massive experience that they have. You know, Michael Breen, Owen Connolly in that back line alongside Ronan Maher. And then Jake Morris, who's probably going to be shortlisted for Hurler of the Year at the moment. You know, the form that he's in, you know, he was lightning in the first half, probably a little bit quiet in the second for his standards. But then when they needed a score, you know, and had, I suppose, the brain smarts to put that ball over the bar. You know, he thought about a goal, and we've often seen Jake take on his man in that situation, but he knew the impact of taking that point. So, you know, Tipperary are you know, they're a very dangerous outfit, sure, obviously, when they're in All-Ireland final. But, you know, it's no accident when you see them turn over Kilkenny yesterday.
I'm going to ask you, all three of you, to give us an All-Ireland champion in a couple of minutes' time. But Niall, how impressed were you by Cork on Saturday? I mean, they blew away the Dubs, and poor old Alan Cawley went to his hurling game in Croke Park, and they blew away Alan as well.
Yeah, look, sure. Alan, to be honest, he was glad to get 60 minutes in Croke Park anyway. But no, as I said to you, look, it was definitely the best performance of the year. There's no doubting that. I just think the confidence, the state of flow that they found themselves in, I suppose with both victors at the weekend, you could definitely see a reconnection with their heritage. And in Tip's case, it was that doggedness, that toughness, that resilience. And in Cork's case then, it was just that once they get into that flow, they were prepared to really bury the opposition. And they had no sympathy for Dublin. They didn't care. This was their first or Ireland semi-final in whatever 10 years. I just felt, look, your full forward line there, Brian Hayes was really a totem at full forward. He was unstoppable, and invariably, in the teams that have played Cork so far, have kind of stifled their goal threat. The key was get the ball to ground in front of Brian Hayes and get a man left and right of it. But unfortunately for Dublin, when you have two of your backs removed after, well, obviously one of them, Conor McCutcheon, injury, removed after 20 minutes, I suppose, look, it made life very, very difficult. And three goals in the first quarter, looks very, very hard to come back from it. But I suppose the key difference with Cork maybe this year was they just kept, or for, on Saturday it was, they just kept on going after it. 6 minutes after halftime, another goal number five, and then Tim O'Mahony just looking, hunting down goals. But look, I suppose they've done very, very well so far in quenching the hype around them ever since that defeat against Limerick. They've learned their lessons. I suppose they've toughened up, they've tightened up definitely at the back. You see Sean O'Donoghue, really, really impressive yesterday. And I suppose now it's a case of, for Pat Ryan, how can I control the hype machine? And whatever about the hype machine, how can I create a sense in these players that if they are coming down the home stretch, that they are capable of winning in All-Ireland? And look, just bear in mind, a lot of them had experience in 21 that probably scarred them and maybe still scars them, who knows? I suppose last year's All-Ireland was an All-Ireland after their semi-final performance that they felt that they definitely would have been in contention to win. And there's no two ways about it. They're going to be very, very heavy favourites for this game on Sunday week. But just bear in mind, Tipperary have a lot of lessons learned. They're a very, very different Tipperary team. And the real weight of expectation is going to be on one team and one team only, and that's Cork. And like, you ask yourself the question, if Cork are only a point or two up with 10 minutes left, how will the psychology of that, how will it work for them? So, look, and again, for Pat Ryan, over the next 8 or 10 days, his selection conundrum, like, he has to find a place for Shamey Harnedy. In my book, Cork don't win any All-Ireland without Shamey Harnedy, so who would be the unlucky person to lose out? But look, he's in a great state of flow, but I think and Eddie and Brian are both over teams there. Whose camp would you like to be preparing for Sunday week? And I definitely think Liam Cahill has all the aces up his sleeve in terms of that one. And look, can Tip bring that level of performance a little bit extra? It's not beyond him.
Niall, that's a better question than I had lined up. Brian, what team would you like to be preparing for a couple of weeks' time?
Either. Tell you the truth.
Eddie, look, I'm coming for you next.
look, Cork, I heard it described the other day. They're like Brazil at the moment. You know, the goals, the flair, the flicks, the pace. It's just samba-like, isn't it? Like, just watching on Saturday. And I know people can lament from the outside saying, oh my God, you know, what a whitewash from Ireland semi-final. But sometimes you just got to take back stock and look at, wow, like, what did we just witness at times there today? You know, it was phenomenal. And to be in Croke Park and see the colour, obviously, as well. So, yeah, Cork, there's some outfit at the moment.
Okay. And Eddie, I know it'd be difficult for a Kilkenny man to volunteer to lead the Tipperary hurlers out. But Which team would you, if it wasn't Tip and Cork, which team would you want to be heading in?
Sure, look, if it was thunder and lightning, the match was called off, maybe. look, I find it hard to disagree with the lads on everything. To me, Cork, when you get beaten in an All-Ireland final, right, and in 2021, they were badly scarred coming out of All-Ireland. They got poked around Croke Park that day. They got shown up to be, you know, realistically, they were soft on the biggest of day of all, and that's something that they, I'm sure, spoke about and carried forward. So they went along last year and they just barely fell short, just by the minimum, in a match that could have gone either way. The key to, you know, exercising that kind of a ghost is get back to the All-Ireland final straight away. They've done that. They're there now. It's in front of them. It's down to now how hungry they are, because, like I said to Brian there, I was just the flicks and the touches, Hoggy's little touch, like, that's just brilliant. I love seeing lads thinking like that. That's real hurling intellect, to see that. Well, don't take it myself, just pop it off. That's the play, that's the right play. And when teams play like that, it's very hard for any defensive unit to deal with it. If I'm in the Tipperary camp, I would say this is one match, after everything that happened in a league final and down and around Robin and Parky Cueve, that if Liam Cahill had a wish list, this was the one that he wanted to get. And I guarantee you, what's been said in this Tipperary, you know, group, I'd imagine they're saying, are these boys going to put on an exhibition against us again? And that's the sole motivation. Tipperary are in a great place. I think they're their collective has really impressed me, but I'm not sure they can hold Cork for 74 minutes, including three or four quality forwards that are going to come in full of energy. And I think that Cork are very, very impressive. But again, All-Ireland finals, especially with the teams that are involved, this is the first time they've ever met in an All-Ireland final. All bets are off. I would be given a slight tip. I think Cork are favourites, and rightly so, but it's going to be an intriguing All-Ireland final, because I cannot wait to see what Liam Cahill is going to come with, because they are going to come with a plan, and it's going to possibly, you know, raise Cork.
Well, this day in 2 weeks' time, we'll be having a different conversation. Niall, final question to you. Two teams who had a disappointing last year have both come back, and they both find themselves facing each other in the final. And as Eddie just said, Tipperary are going to be as motivated as hell.
Well, look, it gives great hope to the Watfords of this world and the Galways, who probably in our own Limerick, who've had very, very disappointing seasons. But it also just comes back as well, Andrew, is that like the whole idea of resilience, like, do you know what I mean? For any elite sports people there, a lot of the time it's about survival. And I think for even when you look at both those teams, they've had to face their setbacks over the course of the year, and they've been really, really open wounds after it. But they've come back, they've kept their counsel. So I suppose in terms of the bigger picture for teams left in it thereafter, that always represents hope. But just bear in mind, these are two big giants of the game, and maybe a slightly sleeping giant to Kilkenny. And like, there is a fear here that once either of those two were bounced on both sides here in our county by both of them, and when they get a run going, that confidence is there. But just also bear in mind here, Andrew, like, this isn't 12 months in the making. Like, you look at Tipperary, Brian referenced it there, at their schools and their underage over the last couple of years, they've been very, very successful. Cork also have got their house in order, and I suppose look for both those counties maybe in the early noughties for Cork, and obviously mid noughties for say 2010s there for Tipperary, they might have taken their eye off the ball. And It's a word of caution to counties. Sometimes it can take 12, 15 years to get yourself back into that competitive realm. And I have no fear for Kilkenny. Kilkenny have their underage systems. They're starting to really address them and things like that. So, look, it's going to be an amazing final. God knows, trying to get tickets. I know from a Limerick point of view, I just happened to be in the city today and I saw nothing but Tipperary jerseys. So, look, it's nil wind that doesn't blow good. So at least they're spending their money here anyway. We haven't seen them for the last 6 or 7 years.
Our appetite is truly whetted. Niall Moran, Brian Carroll and Eddie Brennan, thank you very much for joining us here on Game On. Cheers.
Game On. Association football.
Welcome back to Game On. It is 7 minutes to 7 o'clock on the 7th of the 7th month. Oh, you have it. All the 7ths.
Brilliant.
Austin and Alan still with me in studio. Bad news for the King of Belgium, Alan.
He done what I did on Croke Park and he left.
He didn't leave early.
77 minutes.
He cheered.
And he was right. He was right.
He had to go and get a dirt.
And I bet you if you were to speak to him tomorrow, he'd be as disappointed as I am right now about Saturday.
7-3 or 6-3?
6-2.
Okay.
They got themselves back into a 2-2, as we said. Then Gonzalez scored right after, a minute later. But then they ran riot. Caldente, who's the player of the year this year, she was part of the Champions League winning team with Arsenal. Claudia Pina, who's an outstanding talent, scored an unbelievable goal, the fifth one. And then Alexi Putellas put the icing on the cake with the sixth goal. And that's them qualified for the next round. As I said, they've bigger fish to fry, Spain. And they will come up against Germany, France, the like of them. And it will be a much tougher game. But that's them through to the knockout stage.
Portugal and Italy at 8 o'clock, yeah. Live on RT2 television. Were you impressed with the Italians?
They got a win at the first game, and tonight Portugal got beaten 5-0 in their opening night against Spain.
Right,
so,
yeah.
So you'd fancy Italy to maybe beat them, but it's all about finishing second, I think, in this group. Spain are going to top the group, and they're just so good. But Italy are in a strong position. Even if they were to get a draw tonight, that would be 4 points. That would probably see them through as well, because Belgium are on 0 points. So a draw will do them tonight, Andrew. Finish second, get yourself into the knockout stage. And the good thing about this, I suppose, is you play the teams from Group A and it's wide open. And I've covered Norway, Finland, as I said, Switzerland. They're beatable for those teams. So good opportunity for whoever comes out of that group that could potentially get to a semi-final.
Have you watched any of it, Austin?
Just bits and pieces, yeah.
Impressive standard is
incredible. Yeah, it's incredible. I was chatting to Alan beforehand as well, but just the technical ability of some of them, in particular, even talking about Spain, they're even catching that game there. Like, it's absolute quality, and some of the young talent that's coming through, like, it's a brilliant tournament, you know.
quick comment on the League of Ireland. We're not going to, we've only about 2 minutes left, but Sligo, brilliant draw against Shamrock Rovers on Saturday. Not what they need. They need a win, but it was good.
Good draw against Shamrock Rovers. They were 2-0 up, and sometimes when you feel as though you're 2-0 up that you should go on and win the game, but to be fair, you're playing against the brilliant Shamrock Rovers team and they fought back, and then in the second half they were hanging on. The keeper put off two or three great saves. So overall, I think even John Russell said it was a fair result. Stephen Bradley said similar enough.
And for Friday night, two big scores, one at Pats and Bows, which there were no goals in at all, and then Derry.
Derry have got themselves into.
They started slowly. We were all saying they haven't got this squad right. I can listen to you all at the start of the season, and suddenly, boom.
Yeah, they're in a position now where they could be the closest challengers. They're 9 points off Shamrock Rovers, but they've two games in hand as well, Andrew. And obviously, we're coming into the European football now. Big game Wednesday night, Shelburne, Linfield, St. Pat's involved in Europe, Shamrock Rovers. So Derry have no distraction of Europe. So if they are going to get themselves into the title race, if they could win even one of those games in hand, and then obviously the European teams have that distraction of playing midweek and then at the weekend, it might give Derry a chance, give them hope. Tiernan Lynch has done a decent job, to be fair, but I think he should be doing a decent job because he inherited a really good team. They should have won the league last year, so he inherited a good squad. He did sign two or three good players, to be fair. It looks like they might strengthen again in the summer because they're well resourced in Derry. So yeah, they have a good chance, Andrew.
And Bowes, disappointing. I think they had an opportunity against Pats on Friday and they didn't take it.
Yeah, and again, something like what even we were saying earlier with the Dublin Hurlers, Bohemians are still in their infancy and their development. They're only starting off under Alan Reynolds this year. If they were to just, they were never going to challenge for a title this year. If they were to get themselves into the top three, that's
get a
progress,
European place.
Get a European place and build on that again. They've just signed Douglas Taylor. They're strengthening the squad. As I said, if they were to get themselves into the top three, that'll be success for them. And then obviously they might look at a title challenge next year.
And Drogheda as well, good win for them against Galway. And they're still hanging in.
Hanging in, to be fair, showing so much character when you think that they've been hit from all angles the last two or three weeks with the European stuff. And then Kevin was given out about one of the decisions against Shamrock Rovers, Neil Doyle, the referee. Then they had their talisman, really, Douglas Taylor, wiped from under their noses by Bohemians. He's just gone to them. So it's been a tough 2 or 3 weeks for them, but they're still hanging in. They got a good victory against Galway Friday night. A young fella who Kevin gave his debut to scored as well, which bodes well for them for the rest of the season. And I'd love to see, and I think it will, I think they've no league game now for, I think, the rest of the month. They've only a cup game against Crumlin United. So they have a chance to kind of regroup, reset, and have a right go now at the end of the season without all the disappointment that's gone before with the European stuff.
The sun is going to be shining all week. European
Lovely.
Football midweek. Are you excited?
Shelburne Linfield, yeah, I can't wait. It'll be an absolute
cracker. You can
tell,
he's beaming.
Barbecues to the ready.
Live on RT television.
Live
as well.
On RT2, well done, well reminded. And Austin, listen, have a great week. And is there any sporting wise you're looking forward to this week?
Wimbledon. The climax of Wimbledon.
Okay.
Love Wimbledon.
Yeah, week two.
Okay.
It's all happening.
It's all happening. Well, listen, thank you very much for your company, both of you, Alan and Austin.
Thanks, Andrew.
Coming up after the news, Beto da Silva will bring us all the best fresh summer tunes in the new music show. But that's all we've time for this evening. I'll be back tomorrow at 6.